Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Welcome to Homefront. Tonight we have an exceptional guest. We're being joined by Daryl Castle. Daryl grew up in East Tennessee in a small town outside of Kingsport. He graduated from Ketron High School in 1966 and attended East Tennessee State University, where he received a Bachelor of Science and History and a Bachelor of Political Science. So Daryl then went on to be a commissioned officer in the United States Marine Corps. In 1970, he served 4 years. After leaving the Marines, he went to graduate school, went to Memphis State University Law School, graduated with a Juris Doctorate in 1979. In 1984, Daryl opened a private firm that later grew into Daryl Castle and Associates. He has started law firms in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Detroit, Michigan, St. Louis, Kansas City, and he's currently affiliated with firms in Kansas City and Memphis. Daryl has 30 years of legal experience and currently concentrates in the areas of consumer bankruptcy and personal injury. So, on top of all that, Daryl's been deeply involved in the Constitution Party, serving as the vice chairman, running for vice president of the United States in 2008, and more recently ran for the presidential nomination in 2012. Welcome to our show, Daryl. What a fine person you are. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you, Cynthia. It's an honor to be with you.
I know that was a long introduction, but you know what? You just have a lot next to your name. Of course, if I ever need to do a bankruptcy or personal injury, I would love to have a well-respected attorney to help us. But we're not here to talk about that tonight. We're here to talk about what is going on in this country. You, of all people, have viewed it from a bird's eye view. You seem to have the amazing ability to go above the clouds, look down, and see the big picture. So what is happening in American politics that surprised you last year?
Well, I would say not very much surprised me, to be honest about it. I mean, I'm surprised at some things. I'm surprised that the economy has held together as long as it has. The scandals that engulfed the Obama administration, I suppose, were surprises to some degree, surprises that they became public like they did, at least. But I would say the economy continuing to stagger along as long as it has continues to be a surprise for me.
That were going on. It's like watching a boxer in the boxing match and he gets punched again and again and again and he stays in the ring even though he's not as strong as he was when he first got in there.
Well, that's right. It's, or you could say, as I've read some people call it, a slow motion train wreck. You watch it in slow motion, but it just never seems to end.
Was there anything good that happened in our government last year?
Yeah, I mean, I could see some good things. I mean, I think for me, the decision not to start another big war in Syria was a positive. I think negotiating with Iran rather than making war on them is a positive. Those are two of the positive things that came out of the Obama administration last year, I think, but one of them kind of by accident, or he was essentially forced into it, but you know, any time we can avoid war, that's generally speaking a positive for me.
Of course. course. And as a lawyer, you probably are more aware of what's happening in our court system than most individuals. So what do you expect the Supreme Court to address in their next session?
Well, I mean, I suppose another surprise would be the speed at which the same-sex marriage decisions overtook us and kind of overwhelmed us. So I would expect to see more of that. I don't think you'll see many more conservative decisions coming out of that court. Kennedy seems to be the swing vote, and we know how he tends to vote. You can't depend on John Roberts to give you a consistent vote. He does what he wants to do, I guess, but my prediction would be that it would go more and more to the left as time goes on.
With Ruth Bader Ginsburg getting older every year, people were predicting she was going to retire several years ago, and yet she's hanging in there. What do you expect? Do you think Barack Obama will be appointing more Supreme Court justices before his term is up?
Well, I mean, if Ginsburg retired, if she stays throughout his term, I'll be surprised. But she might want to give him a chance to appoint another person like her. But, I mean, it would take a retirement. There are plenty of them that could qualify. Some of the more liberal judges wanted to ensure further left leanings of the court. They might step aside just so someone like them can be appointed.
Yeah. Do you know how old she is now?
She's in her 70s. I did a podcast on her a few months ago. I think she's like mid-70s.
And had cancer and all kinds of problems. But, you know, why do these justices think that it's their duty to hang out until they die, to hang on to it? You know,
good job. I mean, it's a good job. It's the epitome of what a lawyer can be. It's the pinnacle of their profession, number one. And number two, it's power because they get to make law. They get to decide what's law and what isn't, and they get to steer the country in the direction that they would see it go. What power is that? I mean, if you and I were Supreme Court justices, to know that you have a voice, a vote, in the direction of the country must be a very awe-inspiring thing. And as we know, power corrupts the mind and the morals, and it's like a drug. In fact, it's more addictive than about any drug, I think. That's pretty much explains it.
I've seen that firsthand. There are people who got elected with me when we came into the Missouri State Legislature, and when we all walked out, the few of us who remained 8 years later due to term limits, there were quite a few that were not the same people. It's very common to see after 8 years that their character has changed. I saw people getting divorced. I saw people cheating on their spouses. I saw people who started off with a strong moral fiber who by the end were like, who cares, whatever, open for whichever lobbyist donated the most money to them and their next campaign. And it is positively nauseating seeing how power does change some people, and you can't deny it. Well, some people were affected by it. I wasn't, because I always would come home from Jefferson City and my husband would ask me what's for dinner. Family has a very tempering effect. You know, you walk in the door and first thing you're asked to do is go make a pot of coffee. And things like that are very grounding.
Well, it should have a very tempering effect. The family is very important, and we hope that we find legislators who take that role seriously. You know, it's hard to see a person in the legislature who's not loyal to his own family, wife or husband, being loyal to the country and doing the right things there. I mean, generally people who cheat in one area of their lives will do it in others.
my lobbyist friends, who mostly are the ones who fund any campaign, most of the money does come from lobbying firms, not from real people. And the longer I was in office, the harder it was for me to get donations. And I ask you...
there's nothing to buy there.
Yeah, they figured out there was nothing to buy. I'll never forget the first time I ran for office, people would give me money. Not people like real grassroots people, but lobbyists would give me money. Many times I didn't even know who they were or why they were giving to me. I'd walk to the mailbox and there'd be checks from people I didn't even know. But the longer I was there, the more they realized that they're not going to get a good return on their investment. I asked my congressman for a donation one time, and he told me it will be coming from somebody I've never met, but just to remember that really was from him. So what happens here is a typical situation where some people don't want you to know who's donating. So they ask a friend and they take care of their friends. And it really does pervert the whole process. But ultimately, we the people have to wrestle the power back to the people. It never was meant to be where the lobbyists buy up the politicians. However, it works. And so now for several years, the economists like you, who understand fiat money, have been predicting an economic collapse, but it didn't happen yet. When do you think our economy might crash?
Well, I mean, obviously I've been wrong before. I didn't think it would survive 2013. Now I don't think it will survive 2014, but I certainly think that there are certain things in the economy that are inevitable. And one of them is the collapse of the dollar. I think who knows when that would be. But, you know, as they say, to say something is inevitable doesn't mean it's imminent.
Are you encouraging people to buy gold?
Well, I always have, yes. Gold and silver, I mean, I generally put my money where my mouth is in that regard, but it is based on something, and, you know, I'm like everyone else. I've seen it go up and come back down, but I'm not the least bit nervous about that. I am 100% certain that in the long run, those people who do have their money in something solid will be well served for it, because unless the laws of economics have been repealed, and I don't think they have, then you're going to see a massive devaluation.
The price of gold and silver is substantially lower today than it was in 2011. So what does that mean?
Well, it means that the system has been manipulated to drive it down. A rising price of gold is a bet against the value of the dollar, and the powers that be just can't have that. But they can only hold it off for so long. There are plenty of movements around the world to people are starting to get tired of the whole system, and you know, the Chinese, the Russians, Iranians, many other people are joining together to try to form blocks against America as the reserve currency. And when that happens, you can look out.
I'd like to get your opinion on the idea of having an Article 5 convention. When I was in the legislature, the idea began floating around. I went to one of the American Legislative Exchange Council conferences, and we were taken out to dinner by the Barry Goldwater Institute, and they were doing a fine job. Of course, they have a great name because Barry Goldwater started off great as a conservative and gave us a lot of reasons to have confidence that he knew what he was doing, but they wanted to talk to us about having an Article 5 convention. That idea, here we are 3 years later, and it's getting more steam. What do you think about the Article 5 convention? And for our listeners, maybe we can take a minute to explain what it is. Article 5 of the Constitution does explain the amendment process, but up until now, all the amendments have been proposed by Congress. Well, Congress doesn't seem to have the same motivation to give power back to the states that the states have. So there's a secondary vehicle in there where states can get together and propose amendments, and then if three-quarters of the states ratify those amendments, those go into the Constitution. This process has never been used before, but people are saying that's what we need in order to, we cannot trust the Congress. It is up to us to propose amendments now. Congress will never limit themselves. Left to themselves, they're imbibing on so much power that it would be ridiculous to expect them to give some away. What is your take on this?
Well, everything you just said is basically true. It is ridiculous to expect Congress to cede power, but Congress doesn't have to do that. The power to the people is already there in the Constitution that we have now, and we don't enforce it. I remember when I was a candidate in 2008, there were serious things going on in the country then, too. There was all kinds of, the same basic thing that's going on now. And every single member of Congress was up for re-election that year, and only eight of them were defeated. So the people can't even muster the courage to come together and defeat some of the people that we have in Congress now. The rule of law is the important thing. It's what separates us from other countries. The rulers, the king, the president, the Congress, are subject to the same laws that we are. That is fundamental to Western civilization and to the American system, and we have simply departed from that. I don't see what's to expect us to think that if we've done that and that this system gives no credence whatsoever to the rule of law or to the Constitution now, which is completely ignored, what difference will a few more amendments make? If we ignore the Bill of Rights, why do we think these new amendments would not be ignored? It scares me. I am very much against it. That's my view.
Well, let me give you a few of the ideas that they're wanting to propose. One is to have a spending cap. That's something that we have seen Washington, D.C. continue spending out the wazoo like there's no tomorrow. And they're feeling like unless the states propose a spending limit on them, there won't be anybody else to propose a spending limit. Who's going to be their mama who's going to finally say, no, you won't? They don't have a mama. They're going out like, here we've got a bunch of children. They're behaving like children who are being irresponsible, and children with no adults around will tend to create monkey business.
Well, you're right. I don't see why people keep voting for these folks if that's really the way they feel. Cynthia, sometimes it's like when you're in church and you hear the sermon and you hear the music and you start thinking the whole world is like this. You know, we're all like this, and then you walk outside the church door and you realize that there's a whole other big, huge world out there that doesn't feel that way at all. And we start thinking sometimes that there are enough of us who feel the way we do to actually swing things in our direction. But I'm not sure that's really true. When you look at the facts of it, you'll see that almost 50% of the people pay no income tax whatsoever. We've got over 47 million people on food stamps now. All these people, if you want to put it like this, are bought and paid for by this system. And I just don't see it. I don't see it happening. I don't see that type of enforcement coming out of any constitutional convention. I mean, I know most of the Tea Party groups are in favor of it, but I'm not in favor of it.
One of the amendments that they're wanting to propose is in the concept a tie goes to the runner. They're saying if there's a conflict between the federal law and a state law, that the state law wins, not the federal law. I wonder if you can comment on what that would do to our system.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I can see all kinds of horrors happening there. Does that include the Bill of Rights? I mean, if there's a conflict we imagine it. We don't imagine states doing anything wrong. Do we really want that? I mean, I don't. You know, I don't want that type of change to our system. I just want people to vote these people out of office.
I think my take on it is it looks like the Article 5 convention is parallel in some ways to the fair tax, in that you have people looking at the problem, and then you get the engineer types involved who want to tinker with the engine and see if we can turn up the throttle here or move the choke there or change some wires over here, believing with all their hearts that if we can change the structure whereby the engine operates, we can correct our country. Sadly, I agree with you, Daryl. I believe we're going to get the shiest. And the reason I believe that is I've got concrete examples. Do you remember when Common Core became such a hot topic? And before that, it was Race to the Top. And before that, it was No Child Left Behind, and before that it was Right to Work. Well, guess what? You've got as many Republicans going for these big government programs as you have the Democrats. I was in the legislature when Race to the Top was proposed. Barack Obama was trying to get as many states to chase after the carrot by putting restrictions on themselves and very costly reforms on a hope that they would get more federal money. And while I was speaking out against it in my newsletters and trying to warn people what a bad idea to turn our state ability to educate our children over to the federal government, my own senator wrote a newsletter to the same constituents, and he said, on Race to the Top, we should run, not walk, to the race. It's so good. Here's a chance to get millions of dollars for our state. What elected official wouldn't want to get millions of dollars? We can bring home the bacon. And you know, I was so disappointed. Well, if you look at the country today, the vast majority have already accepted Common Core. It is not even hard to imagine how easy it would be for the states to let the whole thing go.
Well, that's right. I mean, the lure of easy money, that's the hold the federal government has over the states, the withdrawal of federal money. But all it takes is a governor and a state legislature backing that governor with the guts to say, not in our state, that's not going to happen here. Show me a few states like that before we start tinkering with our system. Show me some states right now that has the will to resist federal infringement on their constitutional rights. You know, if we have just one governor who just, and one legislature to back him, who just says, no, we're going to decline your money, and that's not going to happen in our state, that seems to me to be a far better answer.
Hi, friends. Do you like what you're hearing? Then go to my website. It's CynthiaDavis.net and sign up for my newsletter. You'll get all this information and more when you sign up for my email reminding you of when you'll hear another podcast and letting you know what's coming up next. Besides, we always have a little bit of humor at the end. So go to CynthiaDavis.net and stay in the loop. For those of you who don't like email, go to my Facebook page. It's called Homefront with Cynthia Davis. And make sure you click the like button. That way, you'll have a convenient way to see what we're doing and to get the word when another podcast is released. Let it shine before men. That's Homefront with Cynthia Davis on Facebook. My website is CynthiaDavis.net. That's where we keep all our good stuff. So if you want to get our newsletter and find more podcasts, go to CynthiaDavis.net. Hey, let's stay in touch. Shine. some people understand political issues by calling them social issues or fiscal issues. Do you see a separation between social issues and fiscal issues?
Well, I mean, I see a lot of similarities, but they interact, don't they?
Well, you talked about welfare, and here we were. I don't know if welfare was being referred to as a social issue or a fiscal issue. It clearly is one of the biggest issues, definitely affecting the states and the national government. Here we've got a lot of true confusion on the part of the people. If you want to have moral decadence in your country, it's only going to be paralleled with fiscal problems, because we don't have enough money to pay for this. Now, I have a friend who posed this question. He lives in the Springfield area, and he quoted from a news item that was popular down there over the weekend. He said, a new support group for local black mothers is starting in Springfield. The group will hold its first meeting from 1:30 to 3 on Monday, December 16th, and they're going to be down in Springfield, Missouri. There's no problem with black mothers going to other groups. It's just that they rarely do, Hayden says with a laugh. I'm quoting the organizer of the group. I just felt like there are some moms who might feel more comfortable and safe talking about things that are affecting our demographic in a setting like this. This group is open to all black mothers, although the target audience is those under the age of 35. Though the group is not in any way limited to WIC participants, and by WIC we're talking about women, infants, and children, Hayden is drawing on contracts with... Here's what's going on. I'm just going to summarize the whole story. First of all, for all of our listeners who've disciplined themselves to replace the word black with African American, this is a word I'm reading from the news item. They chose the word black because they wanted to be non-discriminatory against those who are black but not African. The comments were made, how do we have a government-funded group that only is allowed to cater to one race? It is funded by government. Women and Infants and Children is a government program. They're telling us it's being funded under the Housing and Urban Development Grant. And here's the part that becomes laughable. Government is acting like there is no such thing as family. It's our job to be the be-all, end-all for everybody. Obviously, there are people who've been dropped by aliens from outer space. They just landed on the planet with no mother, no father, no brothers or sisters, so therefore it's up to government. Now, if we were going to play this let's pretend game that people have no family, then that is exactly what it's going to lead us to. But when there is a family, there is an expectation that family should be there to teach these young ladies how to parent their children. Now, plenty of the people out there might be thinking, yeah, but what if they don't have family? Then who's going to teach them how to be parents? And where are the dads? Nobody is asking that question. If you're going to presume that there are no fathers, that there are children who were just left here, and it's up to government to fix all the problems in the world, we will never have enough money to do that. How are we going to continue as a society if we're having to pay for every little detail that could possibly go wrong in somebody's life?
Well, you know, you've laid it out pretty well. I mean, it's terribly discriminatory, number one, but number two, I think in the long run, as Dr. Kane said, that was one of the true things he ever said, in the long run, we're all dead. But in the long run, I think the economy is going to solve some of these problems for us, because this whole thing is going to collapse, and then that's what those 27 other armored vehicles that Homeland Security has is for when that happens. The government acts as if there's no family. Well, if it's left up to the government, there won't be any family. The government is the family. And they're not going to stop until we're all completely dependent on it, just like little kids are on their parents.
I read another item on Facebook last night. One of my Facebook friends in my city wanted to tell me how cool it was in her neighborhood because a fire truck just came down her street with Santa Claus in the back, and they were throwing out candy canes to all the children and saying, ho, ho, ho. And the mom thought that is so charming. And I found it so appalling because I don't mind a fire truck with Santa. I think that's cute too. But can you imagine, Daryl, what would happen if we charged all the homeowners in that subdivision the actual cost of what it cost our fire department to for their staff time, for their equipment costs, the candy canes? I know why they did it. They did it for public relations, because when they go out for a tax increase next time, they know those homeowners are going to remember the time Santa came down their street. They loved having their children charmed by Santa. They thought that was so cool. And I have to admit, it's cool. But why didn't the subdivision pay for their own fire truck and have pay for their own Santa Claus, pay for their own candy canes? What they're doing is buying more money in the public coffers by doing this. And even though I understand why moms and dads would think that's so fun and so awesome, I also want to remind everybody that that is exactly an illustration of how government is trapping us, because you know what? That did cost the taxpayers. I live in the same city, so that means that I paid a portion for Santa Claus to drive around the neighborhoods instead of putting out fires. So what do you recommend that we can do to make things better next year?
Well, that's a good question. I am not optimistic for next year right now. I do the things that I do. You do the things that you do. But everywhere you look, we're coming up on the 100th anniversary of the Federal Reserve here in a week or so. And President Obama, as I'm sure you know, nominated Janet Yellen to succeed Ben Bernanke, and he's appointed a man named Stanley Fischer to her old position, which was number two at the Fed. Mr. Fischer is a dual Israeli-American citizen. He used to run Israel's central bank. He was number two at the International Monetary Fund, and he was chief economist for the World Bank at one point. He was head of Citigroup at one point as well. And he is, like they say, Ben Bernanke on steroids as far as money printing and that sort of thing. I think the Fed is going to keep printing. They can't stop. They're addicted. They know that this economy, the stock market being where it is and so forth, is totally dependent on Fed money. It's going to keep going. What can we do? I mean, I wish I could tell you a lot of things. We stay in the fight. We do the best that we can. But these are difficult times.
Let's talk about the Constitution Party for a few minutes here. You were the vice chairman of the party, and you ran for the vice president of the United States with Chuck Baldwin. Where is the future of the party going, and what do the Constitution Party members need to know about where we're headed?
Well, that's another good question. We've never seen anything brighter for us in many ways than we're seeing right now, because a lot of Tea Party groups are joining us. Here in Tennessee, we've had over 100 people this year, which is a huge amount for us. They didn't necessarily leave the Tea Parties, but they joined us from the Tea Party. And are members of the Constitution Party now, and there's an effort being made to take that movement nationally and try to attract dissatisfied Tea Party people. So we are very hopeful with that movement that it could have a strong effect on the 2014 elections.
What attracted you to the Constitution Party?
Well, I've been in the party since its original founding in 1992. I was contacted by a mutual friend, with he and Howard sense because I don't see any other option politically. At least we keep the issues alive. That's why it's so important to maintain steadfast resolve on the issues of the Constitution Party and keep them before the American people, because this is just my view now, but somebody is going to have to put this system back together one of these days, and we don't want anybody to forget what the owner's manual actually says and what was once a great system in a great country. So the Constitution Party tries very hard, and I fight very hard, to maintain a steadfast position on the issues and to keep going in that direction.
And the children coming out of public school are not getting a very good education on the Constitution or our form of government. I don't blame the teachers. We've got a lot of very fine teachers who've tried to teach as well as they possibly can. But the problem is the curriculum they're given. They are hired to teach what their school district tells them to teach. And so many of our schools have already filled the day with teaching sex education, just other classes that don't seem to be essential for learning. They've dropped off a lot of other classes that are important for people to learn. For example, in my district, they don't even teach driver's ed any longer. Now, I listened to the news this morning and heard Missouri has the 7th worst drivers in the entire nation, and maybe somebody needs to look at that question. Maybe if we put some driver's education back in the public schools, we could improve on that. I hate to see people die because they don't know the truth. Sadly, here we are in the year almost 2014, and we're looking at ourselves and asking, where will the future end up if our schools no longer teach the Constitution? So what do we do to right that ship?
Well, we certainly don't teach the Constitution, and we haven't since about the mid-70s in any meaningful way. But the children, teachers who teach the children are products of the same educational system, especially on a higher level. It's hard to educate someone in the college system today and expect them to go out and believe anything other than what they are ingrained with there. It doesn't speak very highly of our future, that's for sure. But if you want a morally degraded country, and that seems to be what we want, then that is a good blueprint for doing it. I mean, that is certainly a textbook way to achieve it.
Despite what is articulated in other party platforms, I can assure you we have always been in the minority. Even in the Missouri legislature, when they would ring the bell and open the board and we have a chance to vote, the vast majority of the people vote with the majority of who's voting. You can look up at the board and decide if it's red or green, and if everybody's red, you vote red. If everybody's green, you vote green, and then you can ask questions later. When Nancy Pelosi made her famous quote that we have to pass the bill before we can see what's in the bill, a lot of people mocked her and thought that sounded preposterous. But guess what? That's how it really works. When you're there and you see, and I know more about this than most because I was a whip, which means it was my job to make sure everybody's in their seats and voting. And if they had questions about a bill, they would ask me. I cannot tell you how many times people came to me and said, "What are we voting on?" Even just a week ago, there was a special session in Missouri, and one of the representatives who the Tea Party group liked so much voted the wrong way on the Boeing bailout bill, giving taxpayer dollar credits to one corporation. When his grassroots supporters asked him why he did that, he told them because he didn't know exactly which bill they were voting on at the time, and he has since retracted it. Well, when I hear people say this, it makes me laugh because, number one, there's no way you can retract your vote. Your vote is a permanent record. That is your statement of what you voted at that time. And if you don't know what you just voted on, either don't vote or ask the speaker to hold the board open while you research what you're voting on. You can do that. It's not like Washington, D.C., where they're going to for sure close it while everybody's sitting there still befuddled. Oh,
I don't think I would vote yes on any bill that I didn't understand. And, you know, I mean, I would certainly cast a no vote if something was put in front of me that I had no inkling of what I was voting for.
Let me give you another little secret. They have speakers in the restrooms. Even if you have an emergency and have to run into the ladies' room or the men's room for a minute, you can still hear the debate. The problem is they're not listening to the debate. If you listen, and the special session was only held for the purpose of voting on one bill, so it's not like it could have been confused with all the other bills they were debating that day.
Well, no, it's funny. It's the system that we have now. It is terribly painful to see it in the state that it's in. But as I keep saying, I think we're going to have a chance to put it back together at some point.
Well, let me thank you for being on our show because you give me hope. What gives me hope is knowing that there are some people who can see through the hype. What gives me hope is knowing that there are some who understand the Constitution well enough to be able to make good decisions and to help navigate us through the water. And for any of my good listeners out there who are listening to this, call the people you trust, sign up for my newsletter, sign up for Daryl's podcast, do your due diligence, and you'll be amazed at what you can learn. There are people out there who know how to fix the problems, and I'm proud to be affiliated with you.
Thank you, Cynthia. I appreciate that a lot. It means a lot to me.
I have to thank you for being on our show tonight. Is there one last parting thought you want to give our listeners?
Well, I would say that despite the fact that I've been very negative about the future of the country, I am positive about one thing, and that is that if you're a Christian like I am, then you believe and understand that in the end, it all works out. As an old pastor of mine who's now dead used to say, the Holy Trinity never meets an emergency session. God knows what's going on, and it's in His hands. Our duty here is to be faithful, and that's what we try to do every day.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Will you come and be on our show again sometime?
Absolutely, anytime.
All right. Thanks, Daryl.
Thank you, Cindy.
This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.